Now, real people, real opinions. Nighttime Talk with Niall Boylan.
Ireland's classic hits radio.
Recently, we've been talking on the show about polygamy. And for those of you who don't know what it is, it's the practice of marrying multiple spouses. Now, the legal status of polygamy varies widely around the world. It's legal in 58 out of nearly 200 sovereign states, the vast majority of them being Muslim majority countries in Africa and Asia. Polyandry, on the other hand, is illegal in virtually every country. So there is a difference, and some people confuse all of these words, and I know that can be difficult to pronounce for people too as well, but this is the marriage of a woman to two or more men at the same time. Anyway, we wanted to speak with someone who had experienced this sometimes curious, often abusive arrangement. We're lucky enough tonight that one woman who's going to generously share her time and her story with us is Breel Decker. She grew up in a fundamentalist Mormon sect in a family with 14 children and two mothers. At the age of 18, she became the 65th wife of the prophet Warren Jeffs, who's currently serving time, a life sentence in jail. And she joins me on the line. Breel, good evening to you.
Hi. Good evening.
How are you? People get so confused, of course, with these words, polygamy, polyandry, bigamy, and they get confused by all these words. But let me just take us back a little bit to the age of 18 years of age and how you ended up in the company of Warren Jeffs. How did that all start?
Okay, so my parents were an arranged marriage, so they were pulled aside at church and told there was going to be a wedding and it was going to be their wedding and they could say yes or no at the ceremony. They had never met each other.
Okay.
So they didn't know if they should say yes or no, and it became a matter of trust in their leaders, and so they just said yes. And I was their 11th child. And so I grew up in the FLDS, and I'm a product of an arranged marriage. And when I went to school, the school was like, the principal was Warren Jeffs. My first grade teacher was Warren Jeffs' first wife. So I was very indoctrinated my whole life. It was a homeschool, and I had a lot of church trainings. Mm-hmm. And we never got world history. That was one thing we never got. Like, it was all about church and church history and the pioneers and the Mormon, you know, totally different than world history. So after growing up that way and being told that I needed to wait until I turned 18, or I needed to wait at least until the prophet, who was supposed to be like God to us, who was Warren Jeffs at the time when I turned 18, had to decide everybody's wedding in the whole religion. And I had to wait for that day. So when I turned 18, the day that I got married, my father walked in the room and my mother actually saw him first and she screamed, no. Mm-hmm. And, I turned around and I saw my father's face was all flushed and he was, telling me we need to go on a drive. And he had his family, like his family was given to him. They called them like gifts to each other. My mother and father were gifts because they were an arranged marriage in the beginning.
Yeah.
So if either one of them messed up, they would just take the other one away and remarry him to somebody else. The leader had that much say in our life. He could just rearrange families very easily. And so my father didn't want to have that happen to him and all my other siblings and all of my nieces and nephews and all that. So he just kept going along with it. And he actually did until I escaped and the leader just told him he had to go.
So you were his 65th wife.
Yes, I did marry Warren Jeffs that night. Yeah, as his 65th wife. Yeah.
At the age of 18. And how old was he when you married him?
He was 50, I think, like 50 and maybe 51, but I think he was 50.
And and if there's any questions I ask you and you don't want to answer, please just don't answer them because I certainly don't want to disrespect you. But did he consummate the marriage?
No, he never did, but he did molest me. He never consummated
that. And the other wives that he had, did any of them escape? Or did you, when you were 18, because of course you were 18, you were still a child almost, I suppose. Did you notice anything was wrong, or was it just that you just assumed this was all normal and this was expected? Because from what you're leading me to believe, up to the age of 18, you were isolated from the world. You were isolated from what goes on around in the world,
right,
and only told what goes on within the cult, so to speak. So did you notice, yeah, anything when, you know, coming up to that age? Did you think there was anything unusual? Did you see other people try to escape from it, or try to get away from it?
Yeah, I knew. I had a friend, actually, that I went to school with in the same homeschool that left at 14, and she actually did an interview, and I heard about it, and she said in her interview that she was concerned that she was being, that she was going to marry Warren Jeffs, and she just ran away. Because,
okay, she was being groomed, yeah. She was being groomed to marry him.
Yeah, she was being groomed, and she was afraid. So I had similar feelings, like I was afraid, too. I knew enough about his family to know that he had a structure in his family, like a pyramid. He's at the top, and then all the wives, like his favorite ones, and he has all these. So I knew I wouldn't be at the top of that list.
And did you at that time, although there's a lot of religious families in the world and there's a lot of religious sects in the world, but I suppose this is a whole new level. And did you understand at the time, mm-hmm, or at what point did you understand that this is more than just a religion, this is a cult?
It was, so the day I married him, I went and saw red flags because it was different. He acted different than my parents had told me he was. Mm-hmm. So anyway, he acted a lot different. So I started seeing red flags from that day on, and it just got worse and worse and worse, yeah, for me after I joined his family and all of that. So to actually identify when I started calling it a cult was probably after my escape and after I went public. Like I started... I had some factors that made me be bolder, like my mom that adopted me later. Mm-hmm. She's really bold activist.
And
so
when,
it helped me.
The night, yeah, when you escaped, I want to kind of take us back to that day. What was that moment, that turning point where you said to yourself, I need to get out of here? What was it that day that made that day so special or so particular that you had to get out of there? Was there something happened that day?
So basically, it was a process. I actually tried to escape like over 10 times before I actually did escape, because I'd be brought back. It was a series. So there was a point in my life where I recognized that the God I had been taught about my entire life, all this indoctrination about the church history and all that stuff, was not relevant because... I figured God was real still in my mind. I figured because I felt like I had seen too many miracles to just say there wasn't anything. But I didn't know him. I felt like the God that I had been indoctrinated wasn't the real one. So
you knew that the God that you believed in wouldn't do this to you. Yeah.
Yeah. So I figured at that point that I actually went silent in my life. Before that, I was very vocal and researching and fighting the system. And then I went silent when I realized that I was in danger. It felt like I was in danger. I'm like, well, there's a God, but like I don't know him. And we were taught that to pray had to be a certain format or God wouldn't even hear your prayer. So to not know him, I figured he was hearing me because I was seeing so many miracles, but I didn't know how to really communicate with him and stuff. So I just went silent. I'm like, how do I protect myself? Because I'm like, you know, deep into this cult by this time, and I don't know how to escape. I was physically and mentally, I was just waking up mentally, but like I was still physically very surrounded by it.
So how did you escape that day?
So when I did escape, the day that I succeeded at it, I was in solitary confinement. I had worked my way to an older compound before they put me in solitary confinement.
And sorry for interrupting you, but why did they put you in solitary confinement? What did you do wrong that they put you in solitary confinement?
I tried to escape that morning.
Oh, okay.
I tried to run away that morning and they caught me.
And solitary confinement, was that like a room that you were put in solitary confinment?
Yeah.
Okay, locked. Yeah, it was locked at your meals. Yeah.
And the door, yeah, I was completely locked in. I found some scissors and I unscrewed the screws that were holding the window shut.
Okay.
And, yeah, so that's, then I climbed out the window, and I had to do it in broad daylight because I knew if I messed with those screws at the, like when my caretaker was home, if I did it while there was somebody in the house that was good with a, you know, a drill or whatever,
yeah,
they would just put screws all at the window and I wouldn't have been able to escape. So I waited until I heard the truck leave because I knew they had work that day. And fortunately, they had a meeting that day, so they didn't just run away when the people that were at home called him. Yeah.
So you got out the window in your bare feet.
Yeah, I there was a few times, but the last time I did actually have shoes, but like there was a time I did almost escape with bare feet. But anyway, I ran to took back roads because I'd been caught on the main roads that morning. And I went through like what they call the creek here is like sandy. It's like the waterway. I ran to a house, and right before I got to the house I was running to that I knew they had left the church. I couldn't just go to any house in the community because even though it was an older compound, a lot of them were still FLDS at the time. And I didn't want to, that would just turn me back into Warren Jeff. So and I couldn't really even call the police because they were FLDS. 911 was FLDS people.
Let me get this straight. So even the local police respected this guy, Warren Jeffs. They had respect for this community.
Yes, they were all.
So if you turned up at a police station, they'd bring you back.
Yeah. So right now they are not affiliated with FLDS. They're all switched out to people that are not FLDS. So, yeah. So at the time, I didn't really want to call the police either, but I knew of a house that the family had all left together. So that's where I headed. And then I ran through a yard right before I got there, and there was a lady sitting out in her yard that was dressed like ex-FLDS. Like she was basically without the uniforms, you know, the dresses and braided hair and all that. So she talked to me and she's like, "Do you need help?" And I said, "I'm trying to get to the neighbor's house." And she drove me up to the neighbor's house and asked if she could come in with me or if she should just leave. And I said, "You might as well come in." So she went in with me and she knew who to call to get me out of the town before the end of the day. Where the family I ran to had too recently left. They knew there was some small organizations that helped people, but they didn't know their phone numbers.
And you must have been terrified.
I was definitely terrified. It took me about 6 months from that day. So it was May 23rd, almost 11 years ago that this happened. They chased me. They put me on the missing list in America. And I had to get that taken care of later with people that were on the outside. But I was terrified. It took me 6 months from May that day to have constant clarity. Like I was in survival mode for at least 3 months. But then when I did get significantly far away, I went to a family in Tennessee, which is quite far from Utah in America. And that's when I started to realize I was actually free. And then I worked toward changing my whole identity in America. So
how do you rebuild your life from something like that? Because because you had been indoctrinated into this cult with a way of living and an understanding of the world around you, which wasn't real. So the new world around you must have been terrifying.
It was, yes. And my logo now today is like, it's a fire poppy and a butterfly. And I put them together because the fire poppy grows up first after a fire in some areas in America. And the butterfly is a significant thing for rebirth. So it means I was reborn. So the name of it is Renew. I have that on my logo also, Renew, and it means resilience, even now, and emerging with wings. So it's basically I came out in a new world I didn't know in a traumatized state and had to grow from there.
Because I suppose your day when you were, you know, within the compound, your day was very different to the days that you have now, obviously, as a free person. Well, what I suppose taking you back again just a little bit, what was the average day like in the compound? And you know, what were people treated like in general?
So an average day for the women was different than the boys and the men. They had different chores that they would allow, the church had a lot of say in everybody's lives. So they decided where we lived, who we lived with, what kind of chores we did. The women were never told, and the girls, the children were never asked, what do you want to be when you grow up? It was always, you will be this. So for me, it was always, you will be a mother in science. So, yeah, I grew up cooking and sewing and gardening and cleaning and teaching school. But all that stuff, it's good skills to know now.
Of course.
They don't really...
But you were denied the education. Yeah. I suppose you were denied an education that you would have normally got if you had been outside.
Yeah, because even no matter how high you went in homeschool, you would have to go get a GED after. Mm-hmm. Even if you graduated homeschool, it wasn't recognized by the state or the...
And how...
They had to go get...
I mean, how did the others in the community treat people as well? I mean, apart from, I'll get back to Warren Jeffs in a second because he's in jail at the moment, but how did other people in the community treat you? Were you treated well enough by other people in the community?
Actually, I recently found out from a different wife that was married to Warren at the same time that I was, that on the day that I married him, he actually told his family to keep me at arm's length and told them I was crazy. And so they didn't want to cross that line because they would get a repercussion. They would get corrected or a punishment for helping me. So I didn't know that until after my documentary hit. That came out on it's called Prisoner of the Prophet on Discovery Plus. It came out on January 30th of this year.
Mm-hmm. So you would have seen, testimony from other people in that documentary, of course, yeah. And do you still have contact with your family now?
I do some of them. I have two brothers that I'm really close to. My father, he's considering moving in with us.
Okay.
We have a lot of,
Yeah.
Yeah. Most of my family doesn't talk to me, but there's more and more.
So Warren Jeffs, the prophet, as they called him, the prophet Warren Jeffs, who is seen as their second coming of Christ almost by all of these people, he's now in jail for a life sentence for what he did. Do you remember the day that he was arrested?
Yes, I was in the church trying to escape. I had already figured I would have to. And when they announced that they were going to do all that, then I remember that day really well. Mm. It was the middle of the night. They called us. Yeah.
What was he charged with, by the way? What's the crime he's actually charged with? Is it grooming? Is it polyandry?
It's underage brides.
Okay, underage brides. Okay.
Yeah. So basically, he's in jail for life. Yeah, life, because he committed so many underage bride things, children.
And he was still, while he was in jail, he still tried to operate the cult while he was in jail as well.
Yes, still. He has a son that is in that position as not the prophet yet. He can't be the prophet till his father dies, but he's like recommended or something.
Yeah.
So.
Well. Yeah. Well, look, all I can say is that, and how's your life now? How do you feel now? Do you feel good, Breel?
Now I'm actually quite happy. I went and got his house. So that was one thing I did after I changed my identity. I went and got one of his houses in the older compound that I escaped from and found a organization called the Dream Center that made a recovery center in the big 28,000 square foot house. It's like a mansion, has 50 rooms. And I work here now.
Okay.
Yeah, and I'm also remarried.
I was going to say, are you in a relationship now? And was that difficult, by the way, for you to get into a relationship?
I waited 4 years and then I started dating.
Okay.
And then, I've been married about 7 years.
Mm.
Yeah.
And your relationship with God? Yeah. What's your relationship with God like now?
I believe in God. I do have like a non-denominational Christian background. I mean, now, because it was just really shocking and striking to realize that people cared about each other. It was an invitation, you know, it was just a whole different thing than I'd ever been exposed to. Ours was work growing up. So we had rules on how to make it to heaven. And it was totally different than just an invitation. So I like that.
I suppose one of the big issues we're talking about in Ireland at the moment, and we can't help but talk about it constantly all the time, is free speech. And I suppose you would have opinions yourself on being able to speak and having the freedom to speak, because within a cult or a compound like that, you daren't say anything out of turn. So it must have been exciting to be able to have an opinion and to freely yeah. speak.
And also have feelings. Mm. We were told to keep sweet no matter what, so we could never have any feeling except for sweetness, or we would be punished. So you couldn't have sadness, you couldn't have anger, you couldn't have any other emotion.
So if you had a bad day and you were feeling down, you had to pretend you were happy.
Yes. And they always, a lot of people, when they meet up with SLVS in the world, they think they are happy because they've been conditioned to only show that emotion. And even me, when I talk, a lot of times I'll smile in the most horrific things because that's just my indoctrination. That's how I grew up. Like, I don't know how to stop smiling sometimes. It's still ingrained into me.
Because it's brainwashing. It's the same. Yeah. I mean, you understand now, looking back at, you know, your life, that you essentially were indoctrinated, you were brainwashed into a way of thinking.
Right.
And it just goes to show you how easy it is to do that to people. And it is shocking. And look, it's a kind of life sentence for you too, because it's something you will never forget. It's something that's going to be carried with you for the rest of your life. But I suppose you'll get through life as best you can now.
Yeah. I find joy in helping people and passionate, very passionate about helping children for sure. Like I'm working toward working with the laws and things to help things to put checks and balances in for the kids so they actually get the trainings they need, the reading. You know, you have to have state testing, I feel like. So.
And by the way, just finally, I mean, is this very common? Because we hear about this quite a lot in America, not so much in Europe. You don't hear about it as much. You know, the kind of cults or sects or religions or compounds. Is this still, I'm assuming it's not as big in America now as it used to be many years ago. And we've seen some tragedies like in Waco, Texas, for example, and places like that, or the Manson family and all those other cults. Is it still common? Is it still happening quite a lot?
I think it's a way for like people to take away freedom based on the way the laws are in America. Mm-hmm. It's based on freedom. You know, America's supposed to be free. Mm-hmm. Freedom of speech, freedom and not, you know, freedom of religion. It's a way that like corrupt people have learned to take away freedom from people who have that right, honestly, from birth. But they take it away based on those very factors. So it is pretty common in America, honestly, and it's really, really sad. It's something that I'm very passionate about, like fighting against, because I want to change, not change freedom, but like make it so that there's better ways to go check on people and especially kids. That we don't have to always go through law enforcement to find something wrong to even go in. I want to just have a routine of giving them resources or something. You know, children have school resources or something. Just make it easier to check on these compounds that are just locked down. And the new ones have like guard towers and gates around them. You don't even know where to run if you're in there, and you don't know where the neighbors are. It's quite far out. And then you don't have enough time because they have like people drive around on four wheelers every 15 minutes. And they had me on 24-hour watch. It's a miracle I survived all that.
It is a miracle. And I'm glad you did. And I'm glad you're here talking to us today. And I know, for people who are interested, there is a documentary. Sorry, the name of the documentary again?
Is Prisoner of the Prophet on Discovery Plus.
Prisoner of the Prophet, and it's on Discovery Plus, and it's available to anybody who might have that. I'm sure many of you out there might have Discovery Plus. Listen, Breel, it's been lovely talking to you, and I'm sorry you went through what you did in your life. Absolutely, I couldn't imagine how that must have been, living like that. I know for you at the time it was normal, until you realised it wasn't normal. But I'm glad you've now got your life together, and I'm glad you found happiness, true happiness, in a nice relationship, I hope. And I hope you have continued happiness for the rest of your life.
Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed.
By the way,
can I just mention to you too, Breel, there's so many messages by text and WhatsApp coming in at the moment of support, of people saying how wonderful you are. Somebody's mentioned here that you're incredibly strong, to be able to leave something like that. So there's so many messages of support coming in from people. I could be all day reading them out here to you, but I'm sure you've heard it all before.
Thank you
very much.
Now, real people, real opinions. Nighttime Talk with Niall Boylan.
Ireland's classic hits radio.